Hello and welcome to the True Self Podcast. I'm your host, Krista. And today we're going to be talking about cultivating awareness. So one of the most first and most difficult steps in connecting with your true self in my personal journey is becoming aware. In particular, becoming aware of the patterns of behaviors, the thoughts, the emotions of this human insanity condition that we all live day in and day out. And if people do not become aware of their own destructive, insane patterns, basically they'll forever live out the same cause and effects over and over. I know I saw this in myself where I would have the same things happen to me over and over in different scenarios, different people. And I would think to myself, well, why is this happening? Well, I wasn't really bringing awareness to those patterns of behaviors, the thoughts and emotions that went along with it. I was living out that human insanity condition, so to speak. So when people become aware of what's really going on, they can start the process of disidentifying with this false self that we call, or the ego, or whatever you want to call it. And as with anything, there are many layers and levels to the false self, all of which that can be chipped away by, just time and cultivating more and more awareness of what is false and what is true within the self. So deepening awareness leads people into great insights into the story of them. And each of us has our own unique story. And with that story, if you bring awareness to it, you start to understand why and how we become who we are, why we believe in things, why we have certain emotions, why we have certain perceptions about things, why we have, we draw from our memories, our thought patterns, and our judgments, and our attachments, and all these things that come up into this big picture of our false self or our ego. So when we start bringing awareness to the false self, is people start to become more aware of that deeper part of themselves, the true self, right? That observes all of the mind chatter and the emotions that go along with it. And so most people are unaware of their mind chatter or the voice in their head, right? And the emotions that it creates. And most of us will move from one thought to another, and we'll let our thoughts and emotions have free range over our life and our well-being, not being fully conscious of what's happening while we're all living this, in human insanity condition. And people become on sort of like this autopilot where they live day in and day out these certain patterns of thoughts, which causes behaviors and emotions, and it's all based off of any given circumstance, right? And depending on the scenario, the false self will process the information as sort of like a supercomputer, have you, and it will draw from a memory bank of information, emotions, belief systems, perceptions, and that will cause the voice in our head to create thoughts on how to process the scenario. And through these thoughts, they generate this energetic emotion, which is pulled from the false self memory bank of previous life experiences. So I think that we can relate to that in that, a lot of times we live our life on this sort of autopilot where we do the same things over and over again, right? And based off of our previous life experiences, this will draw upon our memories and create an emotion or a pattern of thoughts. And we'll just continue to kind of live out this, I like to call it sometimes this wheel of karma, where we're just going on the wheel of karma and we have no idea how to get off of it because we're just not completely aware. And that's why bringing awareness is one of the first, and it can be the hardest step to understand the false self versus connecting to the true self. So Unfortunately, many people, they spend their lives chasing emotions caused by the mind voice, or the, if you want to call the mind voice, the false self. And they live out those same cause and effect behaviors over and over. And they'll do anything in their power to feel good and avoid any of these painful emotions, right? And the paradox is that when people leave their well-being to the false self, the false self gets us in all sorts of trouble by constantly trying to change our outer world to fix our inner state of turmoil. So it's my opinion, and I've felt this in my journey, is that unless people properly heal the inner turmoil and realize what the false self is and connect to that greater part of themselves, they will never be able to find an external solution that will satisfy the false self. When people are unconscious of the false self and what it does to them, the false self takes control and makes sure that, you know, every thought or interaction is all about protecting and controlling to make the false self feel good and to feel worthy. But when things are going good, you know, for the false self, if things are going good and they're going our way, the false self feels good. And therefore, the thoughts and emotions, they feel good. But when the false self feels threatened, the false self will start its negative chatter and will be down, you know, in doom and gloom blame before it even happens. So we talked a little bit about the importance of bringing awareness to the mind voice, the false self, the ego. But in my opinion, there are three main categories of the false self, which could help you to identify which or which of these categories your false self falls into. And of course, we can sometimes take from all three of them to a varied degree, but I'll go ahead and get started. So the first one is the ego of the self, or the false self of the self. This ego is, you know, looking out for number one at all times without regard to others. Many would describe this type of ego or false self as selfish and potentially manipulative to get its way. This ego does not give regards to others' well-being, but is self-serving at its best, and even if that means stepping over people to get there. This ego may feel very good about itself, and, you know, some people may admire this particular person out of the outer appearances, right? But this ego is never satisfied and it's always wanting more and more. And sometimes this ego feels entitled, like it deserves favorable treatment because at it's the best at this or that. And even when this ego achieves a goal, the happiness of it is fleeting because of its emptiness. So it searches for something else to chase or acquire. This ego tends to like to acquire wealth and exert its overarching power over others to serve and feed itself further, to fill the growing void of not connecting to who they really are, the true self. This ego never arrives because the void is never filled, never good enough, and it often takes being on their deathbed of this ego to see they got it all wrong. Now, the description may sound a little harsh, but it is meant to give a good picture of what it can be at its worst, right? This is, you know, and I think that everyone can probably relate at least some aspect of their ego with this, in that there is this need to perhaps acquire power. There is this need to be the best at something. There is this belief that it's okay to step on other people in order to get to the top. You know, we see this a lot in our American culture, especially where the mindset is, you know, it's okay if you want to be the best, you got to be be willing to do what it takes, right? And that means if you have to shove someone to the side or, you know, step on other people to get it, then that is what you must do, right? And of course, that's not all Americans, thank gosh, but it is kind of that underlying belief of a lot of Americans, and I think a lot of people around the world, that their focus and the false self is the self, number one. So the second ego category that I've seen in people, and I've really seen this one a lot in myself, is what I like to call the controller. So the controller, they'll go to any extent possible to control all outcomes of a situation. When they're in control, they feel safe, they feel validated, and this gives them a false sense of security and well-being. The controller may take the safe job. They may have the 2.5 kids because that's what everyone else is doing that's being safe, right? The controller will put their sword and their shield out daily and make sure everyone and everything is in place to maintain the safe and secure environment where the mind voice or the false self is put to bay and all is well and good. So we usually see folks that are perfectionist or a type A personality falling under this ego. The interesting thing about the controller is they tend to be very complex thinkers and they internalize a lot of emotions because of the sheer amount of thoughts that they have. And the controller will usually find itself out of control when the bottle is about to burst open with those unsuppressed thoughts and those emotions. I know with myself, there have been many times in my life where this controller, false self, ego personality has come out. And, you know, I have my little checklist and I go through my checklist. And if I don't meet all things on the checklist, then I get a little pain in the chest and I say, okay, I'm not perfect. And then I start doubting myself. But, you know, on another day, if I get all the things on my checklist and I do everything and I perform perfectly at work or whatever, and everything is perfect, then in my view, I feel good. Everything is under control. Everything is safe. But the thing is that life isn't like that. You can't be in a complete state of control at all times. It's just not feasible. It's not feasible to be perfect. You have to accept life with all of its imperfections, right? And embrace and be flexible. I think one of the biggest things I've learned about my controller thought self is that you have to push past and be more flexible with things, but flexible with life. And you have to recognize that controller within you when you're acting in that perfectionist way or you're trying to control all the outcomes of something and not being completely open to what life presents to you. So the last category that I have is the category of the victim. And so the victim is what it sounds like. They're that's the false self ego that will blame everyone, including themselves, for their pain. They will shuffle through life and they're looking for a savior to save them, anything, whether that be an external solution or a person. And they might say things like, I'm not smart enough, I'm not pretty enough, I'm not rich enough. I'll never be, because of the lack of opportunity, discrimination, bad luck, you name it. This ego blames their inner state of turmoil on everyone but themselves, with a string of never-ending excuses of why they cannot make it or succeed in life. And unfortunately, if you look at the energy of these three different false self categories, this one is the weakest energetic link of the three egos, and it often feels helpless in getting ahead in life. This is due to the fact that this ego gives their inner power away to something outside of themselves. And due to the low amounts of energy, the victim may have developed diseases or codependencies on others just to get by in life, because they can't stand on their own. They feel like they're a victim that needs to be saved. So all of these three egos grow and expand over time with the growing identification and attachments to certain things as our ego develops. And they all seek to validate themselves by further playing the same cause and effect behaviors and those patterns that we talked about over and over and over again. And when we're on that autopilot, you know, we can pull from any of those three main categories. And as we live out those same cause and effects over and over again, we're further identifying ourselves with this, with these different egos. If you ever watched the movie Soul, the recent Disney movie, it was pretty amazing. I would definitely recommend to watch it. But there's this part in the movie where this soul becomes lost. And in their lostness, they start identifying with their false self and their voices and the emotions and everything. And then it becomes like this big black shell around the beautiful, vibrant soul, right? And it's almost like the soul is in the center of the shell, and it's just listening to all of the false self rhetoric that it's saying over and over again, you're not good enough, da 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 da, you didn't do this, da 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 da. And the true self is just kind of sitting there in its purest state, while this storm and this shell has formed on the outside of the true self. And it's kind of like a monster looking thing, but it's not really a monster. It's just what I would call the false self identification. So as people, further identify with things, and I think the movie shows it very well, is it almost becomes like this monster around us of this false self, this further identification. So another thing is that when people start identifying themselves to something external, they tie it to their self-worth. So as an example, a person identifies themselves as a champion tennis player. As soon as they start to lose games, their sense of self-worth is diminished. If they're winning games, they further validate their identity as a champion tennis player, and their self-worth is stabilized until something threatens it. But in either case, the winning or losing, there is a belief that I am a champion tennis player, and it's tied to the self-worth as a human being. So this example actually comes from a very close member of my family. He was a very good player as a child. And he, you know, I started to identify himself at a very young age as I am a very good tennis player. And so throughout his tennis career, you know, he just kept on getting better and better, and the tennis matches kept on getting more and more and more. And there was this dream to be a professional tennis player. And so what happened was, in that process, he started to lose the joy of why he was playing in the first place, because he started to identify himself as this champion tennis player. So it was all about the game and living out those same cause and effect behaviors. And with many things, we all start doing something because it gives us joy and it makes us happy. But as soon as we identify with it and it becomes part of our ego, our joy and our happiness is controlled by that, right? And so what happened in this example is when he started to lose matches, right? He started to become very distressed, and that self-worth that was his self-worth that was tied to I am a champion tennis player made his ego question his self-worth, right? And it became a very vicious cycle where there was a lot of mental turbulence because he was identified as a champion tennis player. And then when he was not winning his games, he was lost in his own thoughts. He was questioning his self-worth. He was forgetting the reason why he played tennis in the first place. And you know what happens is he lost his joy. And I think that his joy for playing the game, and I think that this happens to a lot of people. I think that we all sometimes start something with very good intentions, and then once we become grossly identified with it, then we forget why we started it in the first place, right? And we tie our self-worth to it. And when that, the whatever ego that we have, when things aren't going the way that that ego wants it to go, then, you know, all hell breaks loose and we feel terrible because we feel not worthy because we're not meeting the expectations of the ego or the core belief that we have about ourselves. In the example, the core belief that I am a champion tennis player. So any strong belief that's tied to a person's self-worth, it's going to live out that same cause and effect behavior as long as we believe it as part of who we are. And even when people identify with something that makes them happy or gives them joy, they can lose that feeling because they've tied their identity to it. So remember, if a person loved to play tennis and it's fun, right? And then I started to identify myself as the champion tennis player, then they can be finding themselves chasing after the belief that I need to be a champion tennis player or I'm not worthy. And you know what? They lose the joy, they lose the peace, they lose the happiness. And so I think that in many spiritual teachings, they teach the idea of being non-attached and not being judgmental, because those ideas help us to move further away from the false self. So the way that I think of it is, when I would display my controller ego or my self ego, and I would see those aspects of myself, my false self, I started to know that, you know, that's not really who you are, Krista. That is your ego. And it does not define your self-worth, right? And what happens when you start to disidentify yourself with those things, you non-attached to it. You're not attached to the identity. And when the false self rears its head, and I don't know, you're sitting in a meeting and someone offends you at work, and you start to feel that roaring coming up or that anger coming up or whatever emotion it is, you catch yourself and you say, you know what? This is the false self at play. And I'm not going to play this game, but I'm going to be non-judgmental about it. I'm not going to get upset that I feel this way, but I am going to use my free will to make a more peaceful choice of how to deal with this. And the human condition problem is that, you know, people are all attached to this story, whether it be a good one or a bad one, or, you know, usually it's a mix of both of them. And we form these identities that drive us to do and behave in these certain ways, right? And as difficult as it all is for us to be human, it's more difficult to realize that all the suffering and the pain are all caused by our attachments to those beliefs, those people, those places, those things that are really not who we are. So if for a moment we can look at it from that higher perspective, like I was given an example earlier, it's possible for us to see the story and how we fit into it. It's just like being an actor in a play. This person is not really the character they're playing. they are the actual person is just wearing a mask. It's just a facade. And to see beyond that facade is to bring conscious awareness to the true self. Although a person may wear the ego mask of whatever the self, the controller, the victim, at the core of who they are, just like in the movie The Soul, this is not who they are. Who we all are is the true self. So another common denominator of all these egos is that we give our inner power away to something outside of ourselves. So the self may give their power away to owning possessions and wealth. The controller may give their power away to being perfect. The victim may give their power away to another person. And when the codependency of external power is taking away from any of these three, the false self goes into all over preservation mode and out protection mode to regain that power. So using those earlier examples, the self may seek more possessions because they lost possessions. The controller may divert their perfectionist ways from one area of life to another. The victim may change their dependency on one person to another. No, I told you guys earlier that I had this tendency to have a controller thought self. And there was a period of my life where I had given up my career. And essentially, I was going through this point in my life where I didn't know who I was. And I did have all these different masks that I wore. I, you know, in my mind, I was, you know, manager at ABC Company for 15 years. And then I was a wife, I was a daughter, I was a mother, right? And so when I did not have that manager at ABC Company anymore, it was out of my, reality. I started to take that controller aspect that I had been focusing on in the job, and I moved it more into my personal life. And I started to be very controlling about the budget, very controlling about what was happening with the kids and things like that. So I took the identification and I just moved it without being consciously aware of what I was doing. So I gave my power away because I gave it all away because I didn't realize what was going on. I wasn't cultivating that awareness enough to say, oh, you know what? Maybe it's my ego that's causing me to act in this way. So when you live within the true self, people are already enough just as we are. And people need some, you know, people don't need something outside of them to validate themselves or make them whole. You know, we're already whole and perfect. And when you realize what's happening with your false self or your ego, you can pause for a moment and just say, okay, that's what it is. I'm going to make a better choice. I'm going to use my free will. And I'm not going to become attached to this ego. I'm going to step off the wheel of karma, step off the wheel of insanity. And I'm going to make a new path. So I think that the bottom line of this particular podcast is just to give you some awareness of the false self. And like I said earlier, one of the things that I knew in my journey is that I first started to become aware of the false self. And I started to really look at the patterns, the behaviors, the emotions, the thoughts that were all associated to this false self. And I started to question, well, is that really me? And as I started to question the who am I, the true self started to emerge. And I think that what we all can do is, as you know the true self and you connect with the true self, you start to see